You probably remember a time when you would say, I can wait for Christmas or New Year to come. And now you probably say, what? Christmas and New Year is here already? What? It's over already? The older one becomes, the faster the time seems to move along, isn't it? How do we measure time? To many, it is measured by the ticking of the clock. By now, 24/7 has become a household word in recent years. There's also a new measure called the internet time. Each 24 hour is divided into 1,000 beats, and one beat equals 1 minute and 26.4 seconds. This means that I have 17.36 beats to preach this morning's sermon. And next time when we have a visitor to preach, I probably will tell him you have about 17 and 40 beats of time to preach. And then see how long he will preach. However, if we read and listen to the media this past week, we read about the year's top 10 scandals, the top 10 movies, the best or worst dressed men and women, the 10 news events, or the 10 worst ideas. Certainly the tragedy in Asia resulting from the tsunami will make all other events pale. This tragedy will definitely leave an indelible mark in our memories. It is events that mark the passage of time. We remember 9/11 because the World Trade Center was destroyed that fateful morning. We remember 12/26 because that was the day when we first heard of the tsunami tragedy in Asia. Ecclesiastes chapter 3 verses 1 through 15 is about events in life. The writer of this book is also known as the preacher. Verse 1, for everything there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven. Time is to be looked at in terms of what happened, in terms of events. And then beginning in verse 2 and to verse 8 is a listing of the events in life. Bible students have long struggled with the interpretation of this particular passage. It is a very well known and much loved passage, especially at the beginning of the year or end of the year. And yet we struggle in terms of trying to understand and how to interpret it. We know that it is a combination of literal and also metaphorical listings. The writer here is not trying to explain why those events happen, why God did this or why God did not do that, but simply listing of the events in life. They are not events that happen to every person. Instead, they are descriptions of everyday living. Your experience this year and the events that occurred this past week and also the events that will happen in the coming weeks, coming months, and the coming years will serve as good illustrations to this particular passage. It's almost like after reading this passage, I would just hand you yesterday or today's newspaper, then you will understand what this passage is all about. Even more important, besides seeing the events that occur in front of us, we also need to know and to learn what are some of the lessons from these events, from these live events. Let us now take a closer look at this particular passage. From this passage, first we'll recognize that time is often marked and measured by events in life. Verses 2 to 8 is a full description of life. In verse 2, a time to be born and a time to die. This is about the beginning and end of life. Looking back at 2004, we witnessed the birth of babies in many of our members' families. At the same time, there were also the losses of a parent, of friends, as well as unborn children. In Friday's Houston Chronicle was a section about 194 babies were born to the celebrities this past year. Yet how ironic it is that in the front page of the same paper on the same day is a report of the death of thousands and thousands and thousands of children from the tsunami. And then if we look back one more year, in 2003, a total of about 4 million live births. And then there were about 2.5 million of deaths occurred in this country. There is a time to be born and also a time to live, a time to death. And then verses 2, second half of verse 2 and verse 3, a time to plant and a time to pluck out what is planted, a time to cure and a time to heal, a time to break down and a time to build up. These three pairs are about activities associated with establishing and also with destroying. We think of the destruction from the tsunami and also we think of the human effort of rebuilding that region that is going on now. And also at a more personal level, some of you have uprooted your family from a familiar city or a familiar country and are settling down in Houston. Others have put down a profession that you are familiar with and venture into a totally new career path. There are some who have retired from lifelong career and is now doing something completely different. And then in verse 4 we read, there's a time to weep, a time to laugh, a time to mourn, a time to dance. This is about human relationship, about human emotions. When we look back at 2004, we recall some of those emotional moments. There were those private emotions such as weeping and laughing. Our tears may have flowed inward. There were also those private moments of joy. Yes, how we wish someone can understand us. And yet often we are disappointed. We begin to understand and to appreciate the words in the Proverbs chapter 14 verse 10. The heart knows its own bitterness. And no stranger shares its joy. No one can understand those painful moments that we had. Those moments of weeping and those moments of laughter. There were also times of public display of our emotions. You remember how the nation mourned President Reagan's death. In Asia, we saw the husband mourning over the death of his wife and then the joy of reuniting with his toddler. We mourn over our loss of loved ones. We mourn over the breakdown of relationships. Then there are moments of joy over some celebrative events, such as weddings, graduations, or a new job. Verse 5 is a very difficult passage to interpret. I wish I can just ignore this, but would like to bring it to your attention anyway. A time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together. There are numerous interpretations on this phrase. But generally speaking, casting stones may be a reference to aggression by ruining someone else's land so that they cannot cultivate. Gathering stones could refer to cultivating a land. You put all the stones together, put it aside, so that you can cultivate the land. And then in verse 6, a time to seek and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to cast away. This is a reference to possessions and wealth. There is a time for us to acquire wealth and possessions. Please note, the preacher is not saying that this is right or this is wrong, but simply describing the fact. There is a time in life when we acquire wealth, acquire possession, but there's also a time for us to give them away. In the midst of human tragedy, unprecedented tragedy and loss, isn't it also the time for us to give away some of the possession or some of the wealth that we have? There is a time to keep and a time to cast away. It is often a reference meaning wasting what we have. There's a time we keep, but there's also a time that we have wasted them away. The story of some of the lottery winners is a good illustration of this. Some who have won millions of dollars squandered all the money in a matter of few years and had to declare bankruptcy. You may have read in the newspaper that the wife of a person who won the biggest lottery money in New Jersey recently said, "I wish I had torn that ticket. Money was wasted. The man was arrested twice for drunken driving. His granddaughter was killed. And 2 years earlier, his granddaughter's friend was also killed in their mansion." But this can also apply to our ambitions, isn't it? There's a time to pursue our ambitions, but there's also a time to let go of it. This is life, isn't it? Verses, second half of verse 5 and 7 and 8. A time to embrace, a time to refrain from embracing, a time to tear and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. This is about relationships at the personal level and also at the national level. There are times when new relationships are formed that we rejoice over those relationships, but also a time when relationships are strained and also broken. There are times when those broken relationships were being mended and being restored. Of course, this would involve being generous and being forgiving. Then also at the national level, there is the time for war and the time for peace. 30 years after the conclusion of the Vietnam War, the first U.S. commercial airline flew into Ho Chi Minh City several weeks ago. Certainly, we look forward to the day where peace will come in the Middle East and also in Iraq. These are the events that mark the passage of time. It's not just the ticking of the clock, the flipping over of another calendar month, or starting a new calendar year. It is about events in human life. When we face those events in human life, what do we make out of them? Verses 9 through 11, we have these words. "What gain has the worker from his toil? I have seen the business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. He has made everything beautiful in his time. Also, he has put eternity into man's heart. Yes, so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end." This is a very sobering passage. There is a statement in the midst of these verses. God has made everything beautiful in his time. There are songs written about this particular phrase. This literally means that everything is appropriate in its time and in its place. It's not about why things happened. It's not about why God will allow things like this to happen. But it is telling us that everything that happens, it happens at a certain time. There is an appropriate time. It's an appropriate place. Even though we do not understand it, but yet this is a very bold statement. However, when we men, human, face issues of life and death, when we see the unfolding tragedy in front of our eyes, people weeping, laughing, people joyous, and people are sad, especially when we experience those negative experiences, we all want to know why. We want to ask why. Why things like this happen? Why God would allow this to happen in that part of the world? Why would God allow this to happen in my life during this past year? But do you know why we ask these questions? In verse 11, we are told that God has put eternity into man's heart. When God put eternity into man's heart, it means that man thinks in terms of the past, in terms of the present, and also in terms of the future. Man is never satisfied with just seeing what happened in front of us. We are not satisfied with just seeing the events in life. We want to go one step further. We want to understand why. We want to know the reasons behind such occurrences. Why do we think like that? Because God has put eternity into our hearts so that we never think just in terms of what happens now. This is existential thinking. But the Christian thinking, human thinking, is that we relate the present event to the past, to the present, and also to the future. We want to seek the meaning behind them. We want to know why we lost our loved ones. We want to know why certain relationships come to an end. We want to know why such death and suffering from the tsunami and other human tragedies. However, the preacher in this passage, in this book, tells us that we cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end. That is, often we do not have the answer. Why God allowed this to happen? Why God made this happen? The preacher tells us, now you will never find the answer to that question. We cannot. But we don't give up, do we? We try to explain why, and then in doing so, we try to defend God. We tell ourselves that there will be good coming out of it. Certainly this is true. We tell ourselves or tell others that God knows what He's doing. Again, this is true. I too have done that on many occasions. But to be very honest with you, this past week, when I faced such tragedy, also during the same week, when I faced that young mother in the prime of her life, was diagnosed with cancer. And then when I faced that individual who have lost her unborn child, then I have also learned that the best I can do is to keep my mouth shut. God does not need me to defend Him. God does not need me to try to explain and justify what happens in the world. Because you and I, we simply cannot defend Him. We cannot explain nor justify the events in life, events in the world. God can handle it Himself. Just let God be God. When we find ourselves in the midst of those human events, those moments of happiness, those moments of sorrow, what are some of our responsibilities? How do we face the totality of life? How do we face events that seem to have no answer? Verses 12 to 15 give us some suggestions. I perceive that there is nothing better for them than to be joyful and to do good as long as they live. Also that everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in all his toil. This is God's gift to man. I perceive that whatever God does endures forever. Nothing can be added to it, nor anything taken from it. God has done it so that people may fear Him. That which is already has been. That which is to be already has been. And God seeks what has been driven away. First, it calls our attention to God. Verse 14 tells us that I perceive that whatever God does endures forever. Nothing can be added to it, nor anything taken from it. God has done it so that people fear before Him. Instead of asking God why, the preacher reminds us that we are to remember first that God is permanent. Whatever He does endures forever. We come and go. Human events, human tragedies, they come and they go. But God stays forever. Second, God is complete. Nothing can be added to it. He is totally self-sufficient. He does not need you or me to try to justify what is happening in this world. He does not need you and me to try to defend Him for the evil that is around us, for all this loss of human life. Those are evil things. Even though this is not the time to talk about suffering, but I feel it is very important for us to understand the loss of human life in these tragedies, whether it's earthquake, whether it's tsunami, or whether it's war, these are evil events. We don't need to defend God for the evil around us. He is sufficient. He is adequate. He is complete. Third, God is immutable. Nor anything taken from it. He won't change. He has been faithful. He has been loving. He has been just. No human tragedy, whether it's the tsunami, or whether it's the Holocaust, or whether it's the war, can affect who He is. And then, in verse 15, that which is already has been. That which is to be already has been. And God seeks what has been driven away. Simply put, the past is repeated. The present will be repeated. And God seeks what has been driven away. It literally means that God sees what is hurrying along. It means that even as the world turns, as events move along, God is watching. God cares. Yes, at times it's very hard to understand this, isn't it? When you are in that emotional pit, mourning over the loss of loved ones, the loss of relationships, the loss of possessions, there's that still small voice telling you that God cares. It's hard to understand, but it's true. You see, when we experience personal and global human suffering, pain and death, our faith is often being stretched to its furthest extent. It can also break or make us. Here the preacher tells us to focus on God. God does not change, and no human tragedy or events can alter who He is, can alter His characters, that He's the loving God, He's the sovereign God. God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. In the midst of human suffering and pain, He cares for His creation. The second point the preacher wants to call our attention is found in verses 12 and 13. It tells us to be joyful. It tells us to enjoy what we have. You see, what we have, all those good things in life, the families, the job, the place to live, those are from God. The preacher says, enjoy. Rejoice in it. We may not have the answers to our problems, but don't let that stop us from enjoying the good that God has given us. Yeah, it's sad too, that we have to begin a new year with such human tragedies. But yet, at the same time, let us not forget to enjoy the good things that God has given you. Your family, your friends, the brothers and sisters around you. They are from God. Enjoy it. And third, verse 12 also tells us to do good. And to be joyful and to do good. Yes, there are too many things that we don't understand. We don't understand the pains in our lives. Our friends are young but diagnosed with cancer. Children are supposed to be happy and facing a bright future, yet they were swallowed up by the waves. Facing suffering and the events of life, instead of pontificating about situation and asking why and going into a philosophical discourse, the preacher tells us to do good. To do good means to be kind, to be gentle, to be loving to those who have brought us joy. To do good means to be kind, to be gentle, to be loving, and to be forgiving to those who have brought us pain, tears, and anguish. To do good means to reach out and help the suffering ones with clothes, with food, and whatever they need. Instead of asking God why He allows a tragedy to happen, the preacher tells us, go and do good. Give as much as you can so that different organizations can bring food, can bring clothing, can bring medicine to the suffering population in Asia. And then fourth, in verse 14, so that people fear before Him. What does all these human experiences take us to? You know, so often when we fail to get the answer we want about sufferings, about pain in life, we become bitter towards God and we turn away from Him. Oh, I can think of some Christians when they could not get a satisfactory answer from God regarding their personal and their family members' pain and suffering. They turned their backs to God and wanted nothing to do with Him anymore. However, the preacher in this book urges us to turn to the Creator God. You see, the conclusion in this passage, the conclusion in this book of Ecclesiastes is, fear God and keep His commandments. On the front cover of yesterday's Chronicle was a picture of children in Sri Lanka taking part in a prayer service. I was deeply touched by that particular picture, even though without knowing all the details. While nations may be bickering about who is the most generous nation, who have donated the most money in this tragedy, you have a picture of children turning to God. Even as I was reflecting upon this message this morning, I understand some Scandinavian countries have also lost thousands of their people. And yet the best they can do is to tell their citizens not to celebrate the new year, but to light a candle. How ironic is it? Nations where we used to send missionaries out, in face of tragedy, all we can do is don't celebrate the new year, just light a candle. Whereas in the other part of the world, in the midst of tragedy, you see the children, they turn to God. Life's events, joy and sorrow, mourning and celebration, life and death, they are to lead us to the God whose love, whose faithfulness, whose justice never change. And you know, before this God, seeing our own limitation and our helplessness, our only appropriate response is to fear Him and keep His commandments. This morning I want to close the message in a slightly different way. I know it's out of the curve from what I have learned in homiletic class. But I'm going to ask you to stand and read this passage with me together. Shall we stand and read Matthew 25, verses 31 to 40. When the Son of Man comes in His glory and all the angels with Him, then He will sit on His glorious throne. Before Him will be gathered all the nations, and He will separate people from one another as a shepherd separates a sheep from the goats. And He will place the sheep on His right, but the goats on His left. Then the King will say to those on His right, come, you who are blessed by My Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you come to me. Then the righteous would answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? And when did we see you a stranger and welcome you, or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you sick or imprisoned and visit you? And the king will answer them, truly I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these my brothers, you did it to me. To fear God and to keep his commandments is to do what he has just told us. It cannot be more clearer than that, isn't it? To fear the Lord is to reach out and generously help those who are suffering. And then you know what? And in helping them, we are helping the God who came and lived among us. He came and lived among this painful and suffering world. Shall we pray? I want each one of us to spend a few moments in silent prayer. You have seen the need. You have heard God's word. You have also heard his commands. Now it's time for you to respond to him. It's not an issue of whether you should or should not, but really an issue of how you will respond. Will you please, as the Spirit moves you, you tell him how you are going to help the poor, to feed them, to clothe them, to visit them. And then in doing so, you are doing to the Lord.